All right, buddy, welcome to the show. Today, I have a tremendous one for you. So we have the reaction to Donald Trump inevitably being indicted, potentially arrested. And there's some wacky takes out there, man. There's some wacky takes. So I'll cover that. Also, Jon Stewart versus Larry Summers. That got a lot of play online because Larry Summers is one of the worst single actors to help get us into the current economic situation we're in. This is the guy who was behind the various deregulation plots. I mean, we're talking about getting rid of Glass-Steagall. And he influenced many Democratic presidents into becoming more and more right-wing. So Jon Stewart takes him to task, and it was glorious. We'll talk about that. And then later on, we have absolute chaos raging in France and what's likely to happen from here. But suffice to say, the French people don't take any garbage. The French people stand up to their government rather aggressively. And then Bill Maher confronts Andrew Yang to his face in a pretty aggressive way. And dare I say this is a rare instance of based Bill Maher making a return? I think it is. And we're also going to have some fun laughing at Kamala. I got that and much more. By the way, quick little shameless plug. We are so close to 1 million subs. As I said the other day, I could taste it. We're right there, man. Un poquito. We're so close. So do me a favor, click that subscribe button. And, I mean, we're going to do a celebratory stream, and it's going to have to be soon. I mean, I'm not saying anything for sure on the record, but potentially, maybe, it'll be this Thursday at around 2 o'clock, maybe. Maybe that's when we'll have a celebratory stream. Anyway, click the subscribe button, help get us closer. All right, without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into it. So, Jon Stewart interviewed Larry Summers. I seriously do not understand how, at this late date, these absolute establishment ghouls are agreeing to do interviews with Jon Stewart. I don't get it. I'll never get it. It makes no sense to me. Because every time Jon talks to one of these people, he busts them up. He makes them look idiotic. And then they're still like, sure, I'll do an interview with him. He's like the only person who still has, you know, some outsider credibility who's able to sit down one-on-one with these sorts of people. So, big mistake here from Larry Summers. By the way, the sense you get from this clip is he is not used to hearing any pushback on his ideas. That he really thinks, like, he's got it all figured out, and nobody intelligent disagrees. And Jon Stewart's going to show him that that's not exactly true. So, let's watch, and we'll break it down as we go here.
What basically happened to us as we had massive stimulus and an economy that could only produce so much. We had huge levels of demand, and those huge levels of demand kept pushing up prices and pushing up wages. But ultimately, it was you put too much water in the bathtub overflows. You put too much demand into the economy, and you get high and rising prices. But
so let me just pause to decode that for you. What he's saying is, hey, man, we cut a stimulus check to workers, to average Americans, and that is what's leading to inflation. That's the argument that he's making. Now, that happens to be total garbage, but he's asserting it rather confidently, so Jon Stewart's going to respond.
Cisco Fed says that is, demand is maybe 30 to 35% of the inflation. Wages are really around 20% of the inflation. There's a huge corporate profit aspect to it. There's a huge supply chain aspect to it. But our method for controlling it seems really much more focused on wages and employment. There's certain sicknesses you...
So again, just to break that down for you, Jon Stewart is saying, in his Jon Stewart way, you're blaming regular people, you're missing an entire part of the picture, the majority of the picture, where it's not the fault of regular people. Anyway, all right, keep going.
Seems really much more focused on wages and employment.
There's certain sicknesses you can have where there's a drug and it has side effects, and everybody hates the side effects. And no doctor wants their patient to suffer the side effects. But if you don't address the sickness, you're going to have a bigger problem down the road.
But the stop.
So he's saying, again, I just got to decode this from you, from away from Larry Summers speak and to regular speak. He's saying the medicine is raising interest rates. And the side effect is, yeah, you're going to have 2 million to 4 million people who are unemployed. So you're going to really, really hurt average Americans who didn't do anything wrong. And he's saying, well, you know, it's a necessary thing. You got to take the medicine, right?
Market assets have gone up 150%. CEO pay has gone up 1,500%. Workers' wages haven't gone up at all. I think you're misdiagnosing the sickness. First, John, inequality is a terrible thing. The most serious problem the American economy has been the cleavages between those like you and me who are very fortunate. That's why we need a strategy of strengthening labor power in the economy. The question, though...
By the way, every single policy he's ever proposed has crushed labor power. What he's calling for right now is to crush labor power. He wants to kick millions and millions of workers out of a job. It's amazing he says that with a straight face.
Is it an issue that somebody whose control is over setting interest rates and printing money can do much about? Now, you could say that they shouldn't have...
So to decode that, he's saying, look, the Fed only has one blunt tool. The Fed's tool is to raise interest rates. If you want to say, hey, maybe we don't address this through the Fed, we address it through other means, that's a fair point. And John Stewart's like, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. We need a Congress to work for the people. That's what we need Congress to take over and do their job.
Funded to the 2009 recession.
Boom again.
Cutting money.
Yes.
By cutting interest rates. You could say that.
Yes,
but
you could.
Do you really think, and certainly that wasn't what progressives were saying at that time.
It doesn't matter.
At that time, progressives were saying, we need lower interest rates so people can borrow money to buy houses and put people to work.
But they were,
we need
they were
lower
stimulating
interest rates
it
for car
at
loans.
The corporate level, where they just put the money in the hands of the bankers and say, you decide. This pandemic was the first time the government, in my opinion, did the thing that they're supposed to do in a crisis. When you look at the stimulus payments that went out, you know, 70% of it was being used for rent and food. And if you look at the recovery in the pandemic versus the recovery from 2008, when you stimulated the economy at the demand level, jobs had plunged in the pandemic, and then they shot back up. The recovery in 2009 was painstaking, but the stock market did great. So our fiscal policy and our monetary policy has always been on the side of corporate easing.
Just so we're...
So to explain what he said again in layman's terms, the bailouts in 2008, 2009, those were just, they just handed money over to the bankers, to the top 1%. And those guys argued, oh yeah, bro, this will trickle down to our workers and stuff. So that's cool. So yeah, just give us all the money, give us all the money, give us all the money. And that's what Obama did. And it didn't trickle down. And the recovery was really long and painful. And what John Stewart is saying is that during the pandemic, a higher percentage of the money actually went to regular people. And that was a better thing. But Larry Summers now looks at a situation where, for example, the unemployment rate has dropped massively and workers have some leverage and some bargaining power. And Larry Summers looks at that and goes, no, that's a problem we immediately need to fix. And the solution is to jack up interest rates and kick millions of them onto the unemployment rolls. And so John Stewart will keep breaking this down for you, but the point he's trying to make is Larry Summers and his ilk, they were in favor of bailouts that served the corporate class, and now we have a situation where at least some percentage of the money went to regular people, and he's like, whoa, now this is a real big problem.
Clear. If you talk to African-American voters, if you talk to Hispanic voters, talk to voters who don't have college degrees, they regard the country's biggest problem as having to do with inflation. Mm-hmm. So while you may see this as having been tremendously successful, our fellow Americans who don't live as comfortably as you and I do have a lot of questions, John, about what's happened. And it's not hard to understand why they have a lot of questions in light of what's happened to their purchasing power.
But you're suggesting their purchasing power.
Because we took a good idea and overdid it.
I disagree.
By providing for too much inflation.
But what you're not addressing is not all of inflation was stimulus. The tools that we have, though, are basically saying to somebody, everyone's paying more for gas and groceries, and that's really hard. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to throw 10 million of them out of work so that we all don't have to share that burden. Why aren't we attacking corporate profit in any way? Because that's been estimated to be 30% of inflation, 40% of inflation.
I don't.
Matt Stoller had that at like 50 or 60%, if I remember correctly. So because what happened was you had this narrative of like inflation take hold in the media. And then corporations were like, hey, we have an opportunity here. We could jack prices up on everything, even if it's not actually impacted by inflation, because we can get away with it. Because now you have the narrative of inflation that's taken over. And that's exactly what they did. Business Insider had a number of articles explaining here are the different corporations. Here's exactly what they're doing. They're basically jacking up prices just because they can get away with it. And so how would you fix the problem if the problem is brought about by corporate profits, corporate greed, monopolization, windfall profits tax. You would do a windfall profits tax. That, now, that's a way to try to reduce inflation where you're actually going after the bad actors. Where you're going after the corporate pirates. But that's something Larry Summers has never considered and would never agree to do. Why? Because those are his buddies. The corporate class are his buddies. Remember when he was calling for higher unemployment from some tropical paradise in the Bahamas, casually saying it? I mean, this is, that's who we're dealing with here. So he refuses to accept the fact that perhaps the majority of inflation is brought about by corporate profits, monopolization, and issues with the supply chain, which are left over from the pandemic. He refuses to respond to that. He refuses to acknowledge that. He refuses to even make an argument against it. He just keeps asserting, no, it's the, like, the one-time stimulus check we gave to people who desperately needed help. It's a really perverse way of looking at the situation.
I think it's a tenable view that all of a sudden corporations became greedy. Of course, there's monopolies in the economy, John, and we should be for.
They've been
much
bragging
more
about it on
much
their
more aggressive
earnings calls
than we were.
On their earnings calls, they're saying our profits have never been higher. We're killing it. The markups during the pandemic are sometimes, they're saying, 70% of what they were.
If there was a huge.
Inarguable. He's got you, Larry. He's got you in a chokehold. There's no way out of this.
In the demand for shrewd television commentary, I imagine the demand for what you do would go way up. And I imagine you convert that into higher wages and getting more and getting paid better.
You're saying it's the market at work.
I don't think you'd call yourself a gouger when you.
I would absolutely call myself a gouger.
When you did that.
And by the way, the effect of the talk show business is very different than the effect of ExxonMobil, right? I mean, let's be fair.
Isn't the show going to be on Apple TV?
Correct.
And I think Apple TV is worth about five times as much as Exxon. I think Apple's price, since the stimulus began, Apple's value has gone up by about $1.2 trillion.
Right.
That's $4,000 for every American, just an increase in the value of Apple.
You just made my point for me.
Do you feel that Apple is somehow gouging or doing something wrong?
Yes, of course. So, and Exxon is.
Look at his face. Look at his face, man. He's like, oh, man, that was my finishing move. And he just casually got back up after I did. Oh, Larry Summers, you're punching above your weight, dog.
Let's talk about Apple. Do you think Apple should just sell phones for less and not have enough phones? What would you have Apple do?
You're saying to me, John. Market forces are market forces. And if demand goes up, are you suggesting, young man, that Apple should charge less than they could charge? Let me flip that on you. When there's a tightness in the labor market, what you're saying is the workers shouldn't do the same. That the workers, just following the same capitalistic principles that allow Apple to charge more for their phones, shouldn't charge more because wage inflation is driving inflation.
That's not at all what I'm saying.
God, he's obliterating him so bad, man. Oh, this is hard to watch now.
That's exactly what you're saying.
No, actually, it isn't. Every worker should get as high a wage as they can. It would be a terrible idea.
But the Fed is going to intervene. To make that not possible.
No.
And that's what you're calling for, Larry Summers. That's what you want. How do you not see it? It's plain as day. You are deeply, deeply anti-worker and pro-corporate class. You mask it in all this faux intellectual jargon, like this is the only way out of this thing. But it's not true. It's not true. Perhaps you've convinced yourself of it, but it's not true. And you're being exposed in front of the world right now.
The Fed is intervening to control the overall level of demand growth.
And what will that do to the labor market?
Because if it goes much faster,
what will that do to the labor market? What will it do to the labor market? It will loosen it.
It's likely to lead
to looser labor markets.
A somewhat looser labor market.
Exactly.
We hope to minimize that consequence.
No, you don't. The whole point is to not minimize the consequence. He's such a little weasel boy. Oh, my God. Larry, give it a rest, dog. Give it a rest. Look, he's being unmasked. Larry Summers was one of the key figures behind the neoliberalization of our economy. He's one of the key figures behind getting Democrats to embrace a more right-wing ideology. And he's like the face of corporatism. He is. He's in favor of deregulation, deregulation, deregulation. And it's this idea, this argument of like, hey, hands off of the free market. It's sort of a market fundamentalist idea, unless and until things go south. And then it's intervene on behalf of the wealthy, intervene on behalf of the corporations and bail them out. And every step of the way, it's snubbing workers. So John Stewart really did a fantastic job here busting them up. Again, the sense I get from this clip is that Larry Summers is not used to hearing any pushback on his ideas at all. At all. And now you finally have somebody making obvious counterpoints, and he's like... Honestly, pretty glorious to see. So Donald Trump came out the other day and said, I am going to be arrested on Tuesday. He had this really long, unhinged, all caps with a lot of misspellings rant where he was, you know, saying the radical left anarchists and thugs are ruining our country and destroying everything. And he said he's going to be arrested Tuesday by the DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg. And it's over basically the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. There's some business fraud that was involved in that and some in-kind contribution problem in terms of political donations. And anyway, you know, they have Michael Cohen on the side of the DA going after Trump. By the way, something Trump should have learned from this and learned a long time ago is that maybe don't stab every single one of your allies in the back and twist the knife, because eventually it'll come back to bite you in the ass. And that's kind of what's happening now. You know, Michael Cohen was his right-hand man for years and years and years, and now look what's going on. Anyway, so... whether or not he's actually going to be arrested on Tuesday is an open question. Apparently, every article I've read on this seems to indicate that they don't really know for sure. So it's possible Trump is saying that it's not true, or it's possible he's saying it and he heard it through a back channel. But either way, he's almost certainly going to get indicted. It's almost certainly at some point going to get arrested. So the right decided all hands on deck. Let's go on offense. Let's be aggressive. Let's fall in line and defend our dear leader. And so here's a good example of it here. Marjorie Taylor Greene. A lot of people have a lot of theories on the fallout and the backlash and the blowback from what would happen if Trump was elected. Let's start with her and see what she says.
And if they indict President Trump on fake charges to go after him, to try to stop the movement that they cannot stop, he is going to win 2024 in a landslide victory, and then we'll put him in the White House, and he will finish what he started. We will gut the government of all the traitors that are serving the globalists in America last. And if they...
That's a little ominous, because you know what she means by we'll gut the government of all the traitors is basically everybody who's not in lockstep agreement with our ideology. So we'll be super authoritarian and purge anybody and everybody who disagrees with us. That's what she means, of course. But look, you might watch this and say, okay, this is Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's on Lindell TV, which is Mike Lindell TV, which is the guy who still claims that the election was stolen by, like, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And, I mean, the guy's been wrong about everything. So, okay, this is fringe stuff. So this can't be, you know, a widespread theory or whatever. I've seen it floated by multiple people, including Elon Musk. So he responds to a tweet about this and says, if this happens, meaning a Trump indictment and or arrest, Trump will be reelected in a landslide victory. This reminds me of Elon Musk saying before the last midterm election, oh, there's going to be a red wave. It's going to be a massive red wave. And then for those of you who don't recall, even though all of you do recall, it was quite the opposite. The Democrats far overperformed what people were expecting. You know, this also kind of reminds me, keep it real, of Elon Musk saying that we'll have close to zero cases by April when talking about COVID. And this was before we got hit with our massive COVID waves and had over a million deaths. So Elon Musk, not the best in terms of predicting stuff. He also said about 12 years ago that he would get us on Mars in 10 years. Now, I'm not a genius at math, but I can see that don't make sense. I can see that he was wrong. So, this theory, look, we... oftentimes what happens, guys, is you get conventional wisdom takes hold, and then it doesn't budge at all, even when all the evidence points in the other direction. So, for a long time, in 2015, everybody in corporate media was convinced Donald Trump is a joke. There's no way he's going to get anywhere near the White House. There's no way he's going to get anywhere near winning the Republican nomination. And I remember at that time, I was front and center as a commentator on the left saying, you guys are crazy. He's definitely the front runner. He definitely is likely to win the primary. And then he's got a decent chance in the general if it's against Hillary Clinton, because he can exploit all of her weaknesses of her being a deep insider, a status quo politician, corrupt, etc. And I was exactly right. But then after a while, the conventional wisdom flipped and it became, as we all know, the Teflon Don theory. Oh my God, he's unbeatable. Oh my God, there's nothing he could do that would hurt him. His people will never abandon him, etc., etc., etc. Well, we suffered three straight disastrous election losses, the Republicans did, under Trump. 2018, 2020, and 2022. They got draxed in all of those elections. They underperformed in all of those elections. Trump himself lost the White House, lost to Joe Biden by 7 million votes. So the Teflon Don theory was wrong. Now, since he's lost, he's yo-yoed in the polls, and there were moments where DeSantis was ahead of him, and there's moments like right now where DeSantis is behind him. And this is a long way of me saying, look, there is evidence based on recent history that if Trump gets indicted and or arrested, he actually will go up in the polls. Like, he went up on the Republican side after the raid at Mar-a-Lago over the classified documents. He actually went up in the polls after that. Now, it was temporary and then it faded out, but he did go up for a little bit directly after that, and there was a direct correlation between when he was arrested and him going up in the Republican primary polling. So my guess is, based on all the evidence we have, you will see a situation where if/when he's indicted and arrested, he is going to go up in the Republican primary polling, probably another 5 points or 10 points or whatever, because you're going to have the entire Republican establishment, all the commentators, anybody who's anybody in that world, fall in line and defend him. And, and this is a big but, this is a super important point. It's going to hurt him in a general election. It's absolutely going to make it less likely he can win the general election. And this is the paradox that the Republicans have been in for a long time. And by the way, the leaders of the party are smart and like Mitch McConnell, even though he's a corrupt ghoul and there's not an ethical or moral bone in his body, he's smart enough to know that the Republican Party is in a paradox. They can't take down Trump in a primary, but they can't win with him in a general. And they've been dealing with this for three straight election cycles, now going on a fourth one. And so they all realize, they all see it. But people like Elon Musk and Marjorie Taylor Greene, honestly, are too dumb to see it. They don't realize that in a general election, an indictment, hear me now, quote me later, helps nobody. Getting arrested helps nobody. That's not a thing. There is no world where the normie, the independent voter, the moderate voter, the normie voter who leans right or left, likes you more after you were arrested and brought up on charges, which, by the way, you'll notice something. Everybody who's contesting the charges here, they don't give you any specific arguments at all. Hey, let me explain to you exactly why this is wrong. Let's walk through what happened. None of them do that, because none of them can do that, because the DA is actually correct. This is a crime. Absolutely, it's a crime. And the evidence is overwhelming. So now maybe you'll find some sympathetic ears to Trump and he'll be able to get off anyway. That's certainly possible. There's certainly other charges which are stronger against him that I would like to see, cases that are more serious, whether it be the classified documents case, which I think is a little more serious than this one, or whether it be the Georgia case with 511,000 votes and the fake elector scheme, or any of his rampant practices of defrauding his own supporters. There's a lot of evidence that are January 6th stuff. So there's other things that are more serious. But on the merits of this, no, absolutely he's guilty. It's not even close. Whether or not he'll be convicted is a separate question. But just the fact he's indicted and arrested, or going to be indicted and arrested, that doesn't help in a general election. So look, the whole point in me doing this segment is, everybody do me a favor, bring it down a couple notches. People who are super arrogant and over the top and cocky with their predictions based on Dickie McGee's acts. Like, what are you basing this on? He's going to win in a landslide. He never won in a landslide. Even 2016 was not a landslide victory, because Hillary won the popular vote by 3 million votes. Trump had just over 300 electoral votes. Okay, a decent electoral college victory, but he lost by 3 million votes. He lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton. That's embarrassing. So what are you talking about? There's no reason to believe. You know what else this reminds me of? When everybody and their mother was saying, all the right-wing commentators leading up to the 2012 election, yeah, I think Mitt Romney's going to win in a landslide. And I need everybody to understand this. There was literally not a single poll that had Mitt Romney winning in a landslide. Not a single one. How are you going to take the position where there is literally zero evidence, bupkis, nothing, nada, and say that's what's likely to happen? Based on what? Pulling it out of your ass cheeks? And that's exactly what it is. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Elon Musk are making it up. They're just making it up.
Yeah, I think this is gonna... I really have my finger on the pulse. Like when I said a red wave was coming and it didn't. Like when I said we're gonna have close to zero cases and we didn't. I got my finger on the pulse of all the facts and all the stuff going on in the country. So yeah, he's gonna be reelected in a landslide.
At some point, you probably want to stop this public humiliation, don't you? I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene's a different total lost cause. Now, Elon Musk, probably a lost cause as well, but he should at least be smart enough to know. Man, let me not go out on a limb and say some dumb shit. Well, he just did. He just did. So, look, try, at the very least, have some evidence for a case you make. Or some line of reasoning that's sound. But these people don't. These people don't. So, anyway, there you have it. Pretty embarrassing. Everybody's got theories, man. Everybody's got theories. There's stuff I think is going to happen, but it's based on actual evidence and recent history and things we know. But even that, you can't say for sure, right? Even with my theory, I'm not 100% solid on it. You got to have some semblance of humility. I think it's a likely he'll go up in the polls with the Republicans, but go down in a general again. But that could all be wrong. Who knows? Who knows? But what I know for sure there's zero evidence for is their idiotic case. And this is what happens when you put yourself in a bubble, right? You put yourself in a bubble. He's probably got, on his timeline on Twitter, is probably just wall-to-wall people sucking off Trump and DeSantis, so he feels like, oh, this is an accurate representation of the country in general. And it's like, are you really dumb enough to believe that? Apparently he is. So what the hell is going on in France? That's a question many people are probably asking, because it is absolute chaos and rage that's unfolding over there. So let me give you a breakdown of what's happening, and we'll discuss it in detail here. So More Perfect Union has a great thread getting into all the specifics. You might have seen that France seems upset. Strikes, protests, riots. Why the outrage? Well, it started early this year, when President Macron proposed changing the pension system, which would essentially raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. So we'll get to the thread in a second, but I want to give you a little visual representation of what's happening on the ground here. Take a look. Now, look, this is actually one of the more tame videos I've seen. We'll get to some more in a little bit. The proposal faced immediate resistance. Just days after his government announced the plan, hundreds of thousands of people flooded the streets of cities and towns across the country, and unions called strikes that disrupted transport, schools, and other public services. Guys, stop and think about that. Hundreds of thousands of people flooded the streets to say, hell no. Hell no, we're not going to let this stand. This is like the polar opposite of the U.S., you know, what happens in the U.S. is like stiff upper lip, stoicism. We'll just keep it moving. We'll pull, you know, individuals think I'll pull myself up by my own bootstraps. We don't have this collective mindset, this solidarity mindset. Well, this is, I'm telling you, night and day. There's a great quote in an old Michael Moore documentary where he says, in the U.S., the people are scared of the government. In France, the government is scared of the people. And, you know, maybe that helps explain why, for example, they have universal health care and we don't. All right, they continue here. But Macron pushed. He insisted that he would alter the pension system and attempted to get it through Parliament. In January, he said, "We will do it with respect, in a spirit of dialogue, but also determination and responsibility." But even as he said that, riot police were clashing with protesters in the streets of Paris. Macron insisted that in a country with an aging population where everyone receives a state pension, pension reform is the only way to keep the system solvent. So here's another video for you. Fires. That's a lot of people, dude.
That is a lot of people. Wow.
However, unions argue the pension overhaul threatens hard-fought rights and propose a tax on the wealthy or more payroll contributions from employers to finance the pension system. In other words, raise taxes on the rich to keep the system solvent. Don't punish working people and seniors. Polls show most French people also oppose the reform. By the way, new poll just came out on Macron. 28% approval rating in France. That is down there in George W. Bush, Dick Cheney territory at the end of their time in office, when they had the economy fall off a cliff and they had multiple illegal wars and a torture scandal. It's that Donald Trump was actually higher than Macron is after Donald Trump was at least partly responsible for January 6th. Wow, that's amazing. Trump had like a 31% approval rating at the time. And in late January, the unions escalated. The CGT, a confederation of unions representing nearly 700,000 workers, cut power to a swath of wealthy suburbs by the Orly Airport outside of Paris. They even briefly cut electricity to the Paris headquarters of the moderate CFDT union. Wow. By the way, another one for you. They cut off power to Macron's residence. They cut off power to Macron's residence. Now, this only lasted for a short amount of time, but man, that's bold, dog. Wow. Some rebuked this radical move, but others called it Robin Hood-esque because of the striking militant union simultaneously gave free power to French schools, hospitals, and low-income homes. Oh my God. They cut off power to elites, they cut off power to Macron, and they gave free power to French schools, hospitals, and low-income homes. Needless to say, tensions continued to rise. February saw multiple days of mass strikes, with estimates ranging up to 2.5 million workers on strike in a single day. Transportation, garbage collection, utilities, and education unions walked off the job. By March, unions were ready to escalate again. Workers had, by this point, held 8 days of mass protests with millions hitting the streets, so now, crucially, some workers decided to abandon one-day strikes for a rolling, ongoing strike. Most noticeably, the garbage collectors went on indefinite strike, and that means trash started to pile up in the streets. Reuters reported on the scene in the streets of Paris. Look at this. Look at that garbage, bro! Look at that garbage! Wow. That's more garbage than I've ever seen in my life. That looks like a landfill. Anyway. Bold. This is bold. Now, some people might look at this, oh my God, they've gone too far. They're not picking up the garbage. That leads to health problems. That leads to rat infestation. That leads to all these different things. And I'm sure the response of the union would be, right. So I guess you better not make those pension changes. I guess you better not raise the retirement age, huh? Then just yesterday, Macron changed his approach. He had been trying to get the legislation passed through the conventional process, but after the massive waves of opposition, he switched his approach, declaring that he would use Article 49.3 of the French Constitution. Article 49.3 enables a government to push a bill through the National Assembly without a vote. It's legal, but also seen as undemocratic. And there's a cost. Opposition lawmakers have 24 hours to file a no-confidence motion against the government. So, in other words, he's willing to risk it all to raise the retirement age. He's going full authoritarian to raise the retirement age. Wow. Wow. I have no doubt that Macron thinks, like, I'm being the responsible politician here and doing what I must do. But oftentimes, people who are corporatists and neoliberals have brainwashed themselves into believing that they're the responsible, intelligent folks. Everybody else is dumb. And, you know, there's no other way to address the problem with the pension system or whatever. Embarrassing. Honestly, it's embarrassing. Imagine, like, this is the hill you die on. You must work longer hours, senior citizen. You must work for years longer. So, by the way, as of the recording of this segment right now, Francis Macron faces no confidence vote as protesters arrested, refinery strikes continue. The government of French President Emmanuel Macron faces a no confidence vote Monday afternoon. If the no confidence vote fails, a bill which will see the retirement age rise from 62 to 64 for most workers by 2030 will go through. If the vote passes, Macron will either appoint a fresh government with a new prime minister or dissolve parliament, triggering new elections. Ongoing strikes and protests over the bill have rocked the country. So, again, as of the recording of this right now, honestly, my guess is they're taking the vote, like, literally right as I speak. That's my guess. But I don't know what's going to happen as of this moment. But, again, I'm just astonished by the this is the hill I'm going to die on thing. I'm going to die on raising the retirement age. There are certainly other ways to fix this. And by the way, look, this just shows you other countries... Other developed countries have a different relationship towards work than we do in the U.S. Like in the U.S., I do feel like what you do for a living becomes much more a part of your identity, becomes how a lot of people, define their purpose and meaning. Not even like willingly. Sometimes you're like forced to build an identity around what you do for a living because you're there most of your waking hours. But the way it works in other countries, a lot of people, you know, they just view a job as a job. I'm just trying to pay the bills so I can live my life. And they might openly not like what they do. They might hate what they do. And by the way, in the U.S., that is true, too. Only 18% of people feel engaged at work. I mean, that's a crisis when like 80% of workers don't like what they do for a living. So if that is the case, if people don't like what they do for a living, then of course you should have a relationship to work more like how the French view it. This is a job. I'm just trying to pay the bills. I'm going to, you know, do what I can to get by, but I want to have a life outside of work. And that's what these strikes represent. These strikes represent working people demanding their rights, demanding respect, demanding leisure time. Because look, any adult will admit there's going to be jobs in society that like people don't want to do, but we got to fill the role, right? And so how should we treat people who are doing something they don't want to do, but we need them to do it? It's, at the very least, you got to give those people high wages. You got to give those people plenty of time off, paid vacation time, paid sick time. Yeah, like you have to make it so that there is a true incentive to get those jobs taken care of. In the U.S., we like, you know, we force them through fear of poverty because we don't have a very good social safety net system. Over there, they have a better social safety net system. So they're trying to keep the hard-fought gains and not lose them and not go in the wrong direction. So, I mean, look, I would say solidarity to these people. I think you could certainly find another way to deal with whatever issues are there with the pension system. And I will mention, to make the comparison with the U.S., like, we hear this all the time here, too. Oh, Social Security and Medicare are going to be insolvent. And then you look at the numbers, and that's 100% not true. It's not even close to true. It's going to go bankrupt. And then you look, and it's like, even a decade out or two decades out, it still pays out, like, 80% of its benefits. What are you talking about? With minor changes, we can keep this thing going. By the way, the change that's floated here, correctly so, is lift the cap on the Social Security tax so that millionaires pay more in taxes, and then we could fund Social Security as far as the eye can see. So it's sort of like a mucked up crisis. Like, oh my God, we have to do this, and you don't. I know that's the case in the U.S. Now, I'm not familiar with the numbers for the pension system in France, but there's certainly other ways. There's not only one way to address this, and that one way is, like, force grandma back into the factory. But Macron wants to die in that hill. Well, we'll see if it works out for him, but my guess is that approval rating is only going to keep going one direction, down. Bill Maher is a guy who we've had many issues with lately. You know, back in the day when I liked Bill Maher a lot, he was hammering George W. Bush during the War on Terror era over the illegal wars and torture, and he just seemed like he was a much stronger voice on the left. Even during the 2016 race, he was pro-Bernie Sanders. You know, that's one of the rare voices that has a foot in the mainstream world who was doing that. So, you know, he had pretty solid left-wing fan base. But in recent years, and you guys have all seen this, he's really leaned into the anti-wokeness thing where it sort of dominates his mind and his commentary. And it's almost like he fancies himself more of an enlightened centrist now. He supported Amy Klobuchar in the 2020 Democratic primary. So he's the only person in the country who went from Bernie in 2016 to Amy Klobuchar in 2020. Let's just say he's just gotten worse and worse. And I'm putting it kindly to say that, right? Well, anyway, he had a moment here. He had Andrew Yang on his show Real Time. And this is going to be a rare return of base Bill Maher. Because he's asking a question of Andrew Yang and pointing some stuff out
that I think is totally fair and totally legitimate about Andrew Yang's third party, the Forward Party. So I'm gonna let them take over now. We'll break it down as we go.
I don't get your third party because I read your website and it's a bunch of mush. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying it's not like specific. It doesn't even mention this.
He's right. This was the exact same criticism we had when he launched the Forward Party. We went to the Forward Party website and there weren't policies there. There weren't policies. They stripped it down to bare bones and it was all just pablum about like coming together and being enlightened and, you know, trying to get stuff done. That is good stuff. We're not going to be hyper-partisan. We're not left. We're not right. We're forward. It's like, okay, well, what are you fighting for? What are you fighting for? The only thing that you give them credit for is the ranked choice voting thing. I think that's good, right? But that's like one of the only things that they want to fight for.
And why start a third party, which is a long shot anyway, if you're not going to be bold and what?
Oh, I'd love to dig into this.
Please do.
Yeah. So what I determined was that our current political system is not going to address poverty or climate change or polarization unless you actually fix the incentives. And it was a U.S. senator who said this to me, and everyone needs to understand this. She said, we're at a point in American life where an issue is worth more to us unaddressed than addressed.
And how are you going to fix that? How is the Forward Party going to fix that? Just by starting a third party? You're going to be subject to those same incentives that the other parties are subject to. Because he misses the whole picture. Why are the incentives messed up? The incentives are messed up because of big money. Because of billionaires and corporations flooding the political system with their money and basically rigging the laws in their favor and screwing regular people. That's why it's messed up. Now, when Andrew Yang was asked about the Forward Party taking big money, his reaction was... He didn't take a hard stance against taking big money. So you're going to be subject to the exact same incentives that the other parties are subject to.
If I lean forward to solve the problem, what happens? I get beat up by my base, my job security goes down, I get attacked. Right. So we're in a no compromise zone. So if you wanted to, let's say, alleviate poverty in America, you have to fix our democratic system. This two-party system is not designed to deliver solutions.
See, this is another problem with the party, is it fetishizes bipartisanship. Andrew, bipartisanship isn't inherently good. Sometimes it's good, but it's not inherently good. Oftentimes when Democrats and Republicans come together, they come together to do bad things, like the war in Iraq, for example. I mean, how many votes against that did we have? One? Barbara Lee? And I think that's it? I mean, I guess Bernie too, but that's it? Like, they've done bipartisan deals to deregulate Wall Street. They did a bipartisan deal, which led to the deregulation in 2018, which gave us the SVB, Silicon Valley Bank crash. So this idea of, oh, there's a no compromise zone. No, sometimes it's a very compromise zone, and the compromise is very bad. I mean, these things are obvious, right? Like, every now and then you can get some bipartisan stuff where there's a good outcome. But, you know, if you were to do a quantitative analysis of it, you would find very quickly, probably the majority of times that the Democrats and the Republicans come together, they come together to do bad things. So the problem is not lack of compromise. Again, the problem is they do bad things because they are corrupt. And he has no answer to that whatsoever. He just misdiagnosed the problem.
Epic again, that's...
I just have to say, so I'm not 100% sure how a different party, I mean, you have to explain how that's going to change the whole system. But here's the thing. If you have a senator, as someone who's running for Senate, if you have a senator who's saying, if you have a senator saying the incentives are wrong, so I can't do the right thing, that's the problem. Not the fact that we need another party. It's that you have people who won't take risks. You have people who are going to put their reelection over anything else, who are worried from a primary from their left or for right,
yep.
100%. But if you put people who are brave in those places, if you put people who are saying like, look, if I don't win my next election, no one dies. I can go on. I'll find another job. Then you actually see the incentives change because then they want to do the right thing. That is part of why our government doesn't work. It sometimes is people.
So look,
that's such a stupid point. It's taking the blame away from the systems and putting it on the individuals. What if I told you there's not much that's uniquely evil about 90% of the people who are in our government? They're just people.
and they're responding to the incentives of the system. So she has it exactly backwards. The idea, oh, you just need brave people. There's a lot of brave people who went to Washington, D.C. with good intent, and then they just become part of the system. So maybe it's not about the people. Maybe it is about the incentives. Maybe it is about the corruption. You know, Yang is right that incentives are the problem, but he doesn't get the incentive right. He doesn't understand the root of the problem, which is the money.
First, I love what you're saying, but there was a guy in Michigan who bravely voted to impeach Donald Trump at great personal risk, Peter Meyer, and he lost his seat in part because Democrats boosted his extremist challenger because that challenger is going to be easier to beat in the general. We have an incentive system right now. If you step up like Peter did or Adam Kinzinger or Liz Cheney, you're out of there. And so there are people that see this and say, okay, I get it. But the way out is to do what they did in Alaska, which is why Lisa Murkowski is the only Republican senator who voted to impeach Donald Trump, who made it back and was up for re-election in 22. You know why? Because they got rid of the party primaries in Alaska. That's why Sarah Palin lost to Mary Peltola. That's why Lisa Murkowski beat Kelly Shabaka, the Trump-endorsed loony, who would have beaten her in a Republican primary. You get rid of the primaries, you fix the incentives, and that's what the Forward Party is designed to do.
Ranked choice voting is good, Andrew, but this is why your politics are so hollow. Because you ended up endorsing people who voted like 80% or 90% of the time with Trump, but they were in favor of Trump's impeachment, so you thought, oh, this is some bipartisan maverick hero, so I'm going to support them. That doesn't make you a bipartisan maverick hero. If you're for the impeachment of Donald Trump, that's good, but if you're not in favor of Medicare for All, you're not in favor of a living wage, you're not in favor of ending the wars, then I really don't have that much interest in you. I don't. So he's got a very vapid, hollow ideology. Like, somebody just has to be a little bit contrarian in order for him to just, you know, totally cream himself and be like, oh, I'm going to support that person. And it's like, casting one good vote doesn't make you a good politician. And so, in a weird, it's like he's starting the 712th version of the enlightened centrist third way approach to politics. I mean, this is just standard, you know, corporate Democrat stuff. But he acts like it's so revolutionary, and it's not. And this isn't going to make any big change in a positive direction. I will come out here and give him credit. If he could find a way, focus solely on ranked choice voting and get that everywhere in the country, I'll give him massive credit for that. But really, what's happened with this Forward Party is he kind of took his eye off the ball a little bit. His eye was off the ball from just trying to implement ranked choice voting everywhere, and now it became a party, and, you know, he's endorsing people with terrible records and whatnot. So I don't have much hope that he's actually going to focus on the only part of this that matters, which is ranked choice voting. Anyway, Mar goes on to make a really good point. Watch this.
I would just say that I think it's one thing to have that conversation at a state level, and I'm not against having that kind of primary, right? There's not a different party there. There's not a third party that they're part of. It's a different primary system. But when you're talking about a third party, like, I like math, right? And I want to make sure that if we have a third party, that it's not going to be handing the country over to people who are extreme, who have fascist leanings. Like, I want to make sure that I'm not the last person to say that the Democratic Party is perfect, trust me. But I'm just concerned that a third party means we're handing the country over to people who do not have good intentions for democracy.
That's not my concern. My concern is almost all the third parties, except save maybe one or two, Libertarians and Greens, they don't even have ballot access around the country. And even the ones that do have ballot access, it's like in 48 states, not all 50 states or whatever. And if you're going all in on the party before you get yourself on the ballot to give yourself a chance, and before you get ranked choice voting to make it so that you're viable, then you're putting the cart before the horse. And you're always going to top out at like 2% or 3%, which is just a waste of time. If we first got to a place where whatever third party in question has ballot access and we have ranked choice voting, then it's a totally different ballgame. And then they become a lot more viable because, you know, people will feel like, I'm not wasting my vote if I vote for them, because I could just put whatever third party first and then I could put the Democrats second. And so you don't feel like I'm contributing to what this woman just described, which is how a lot of people feel that, oh my God, I'm wasting my vote if I do that. Well, again, the way around that is have ballot access for the whatever third party you're talking about and have ranked choice voting. And so if you do those things first, I would become a massive third party simp
because then you're in the ballgame, right? And then you're talking, you'll start chipping away. You'll get 5%, 10%. You know, it'll actually make a difference. But the way the system is right now, as long as you have first past the post voting, it is beyond a pipe dream to try to win with a third party. Which, by the way, Andrew Yang recognizes this to one extent or another, which is why he's come out and said, oh no, you can be a Democrat and be in the forward party. You can be a Republican and be in the forward party. Because he knows, you know, if we don't have ranked choice voting and I don't have ballot access anywhere, then this is just a total waste of time. So he has his little way around that. But again, Marr's going to bring up what I think is a devastating point here.
And what about the issue, though? I mean, if you're going to start the third party, don't you at least have to have one major issue? And I thought you had one. This UBI thing, universal basic income. Everybody gets free money. Whether you believe it or not, it's an idea.
Now, by the way, in the original clip, which goes on longer, Yang doesn't have an answer, and then they just sort of pivot to another issue. Which to me is kind of like a checkmate, because that was one of the first things I realized when I was looking at the Forward Party website. It's like, hold on, Andrew Yang built his name and his brand off of I'm the UBI guy. And you can even give him some semblance of credit for the fact that we had direct stimulus payments during the pandemic. He helped mainstream the idea of universal basic income. Now, it's not even on the Forward Party website. They dropped it completely. So what happened? You were the champion of this idea, a good idea. Now it's not even part of this new third party you created. What's the point? What are you doing? He did a great service by mainstreaming UBI, and now he's abandoning it. And even Bill Maher, who, by the way, I don't think supports UBI, is like, well, that was a better idea. At least you had a thing. And if the Forward Party was just viewed as like the we're the UBI party, then it would be more legitimate, right? There'd still be other systemic problems like I just described, but at least it'd be like, hey, they're championing something that deserves to be championed. And you get the sense Yang knows he abandoned it, and Yang knows that that makes people look at him differently. And he's got some shame over that, as he should. So anyway, there you go. It's surprising that Bill Maher actually grilled him on this and made some decent points, because it's been a long time since Bill Maher has made any decent points, but here we have it. So Marianne Williamson is, of course, running for president, and she's making the rounds, doing interviews everywhere that she can. By the way, CNN has yet to reach out for an interview with her. My understanding is that every other outlet has. I think some more than others, right? Like, it's not like MSNBC is knocking down her door every day, but she's been on, you know, once or twice or whatever on some of the shows that don't get as good ratings, although none really get good ratings on MSNBC, to be fair. But CNN is just, there might be a directive from the top, like, don't you dare talk to her. Which, by the way, again, what happened, guys? I thought you're supposed to, we're the neutral people, we're the objective people, we do real news over here. Well, here you have somebody running for president, and you're not paying them any attention whatsoever. Why? You know the answer. Because they want Biden to win. They don't want to breathe any air into Marianne Williamson's campaign, so they're just ignoring her. They're just ignoring her. They're being totally indifferent to her. So, they shouldn't do that. They should change that. And also, by the way, Joe Biden should be forced to debate Marianne Williamson. I think there should be a law. A law that if somebody's challenging a president, or for having an election, it should be mandated by law that there are debates. Because it's very important the American people hear the different perspectives. Anyway, I digress. So she went on Fox News. She's going to talk to Neil Cavuto here. Now, Neil Cavuto is definitely a conservative ideologue, but he's one of the less hacky pundits. So, for example, I don't think he ever fed into the rigged election conspiracy theories because he thought it was total BS. There are times where he's disagreed with Trump and done it publicly and gotten a lot of crap from his audience as a result of it. So he's a conservative ideologue, but he is more authentic than most of the hosts there, as we learned from the Dominion secret text message leaks where Tucker and Hannity and Ingram were like, we know this is BS, but we're going to feed into the audience delusions. So Marianne Williamson talks to Neil Cavuto, and Neil Cavuto hits her with the classic line. The, excuse me, you have all these ideas and plans. How are you going to pay for it? 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 How many times have we heard this? When Bernie ran, we heard it roughly every 7 seconds. You want to do good things, bro? How are you going to pay for it?
And then meanwhile, when bad things are proposed through Congress, the pundit class is like, shh,
of course we can pay for it. Shh, be quiet.
These people are unbelievable. So anyway, but I think Marianne Williamson gives a great answer. So let's watch and we'll break it down as we go.
How are you going to pay for all of that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Right now, take something like healthcare alone. University of Massachusetts at Amherst has just come up with a study that says over the next 10 years, it would actually save us $5 trillion to have Medicare for all. We now pay about roughly 18.3% of our GDP goes into healthcare. If you look at countries that actually have universal healthcare, which is every other advanced democracy, look at Germany, look at Canada, maybe 10%, maybe 15%. The question is, how do we not afford to? Look at what we are paying in healthcare now. We have an
Let's let that point swirl around our brains a little bit. She asked him, how are you going? He asked her, how are you going to pay for it? And her reaction was, how can we not afford to go to Medicare for all? Because it actually saves $5.1 trillion. That's not me speaking. That's a detailed study from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Now, by the way, it's worth it to explore this more. Why does it save so much money? Guys, the answer is very simple. It turns out when you have a rapacious, unnecessary, for-profit mafia middleman, that makes it more expensive. I know, crazy. If the mafia is getting their cut, it's going to cost you more. And that's what the health insurance industry is. It's a mafia. They are an unnecessary for-profit middleman. In single-payer systems, the single insurer is the government. So you pay in with your taxes, and that money goes out to pay for healthcare for people. There is no profit motive, so they don't need to skim off the top. So it saves $5.1 trillion over a decade. So understand, Neil Cavuto's question, his point, was just utterly obliterated. That's it. It's over. How are you going to pay for it? How can we not pay for it? We need to make the transition because what we have now is more expensive. That saves money and it gives everybody health care. Point obliterated. Obliterated. Now, watch this, because this shows you the mindset in corporate media. Look at how he deals with this, and then we'll discuss it.
We have an $88 billion medical debt. One in four Americans are living with medical debt. 68,000 people every year die
for lack of healthcare. No, you're quite right about all of that, but it's the idea of paying for it up front to get going, right? I mean, do you want to tax the rich? Do you want to surcharges? How are you going to? Because that's just part of it. There's a lot more. I mean, what do you?
Water off a duck's ass.
Right. Yeah. No. But I mean, what I was saying is, how are you going to pay for it?
She just told you it saves money.
Right. But how are you going to pay for the lower number that it's going to cost?
Dude, are you kidding me, man? Look, Bernie actually described this very well in one of the debates where he said, right now, you're paying a private tax to the health insurance companies. And I'm going to eliminate that private tax, which is way too expensive, and make you pay less money through your actual taxes. Chiu, do you understand that point? If you're paying, let's make up numbers here, $8,000 a year for, you know, top grade healthcare, and Bernie says, I'm going to get rid of the private tax, so now that $8,000 in your pocket, but you're going to have to pay out $5,000. That means you're saving $3,000, right? So yes, your taxes went up, but I got rid of the private tax, which was more expensive. That's how we're going to pay for it. That's how we're going to pay for it. We're going to replace the private tax with a public tax, and the public tax is going to cost less, so you're going to be saving $3,000. Like, that's the answer. But his brain short circuits, and he goes right back to, must go back to my robotic corporate talking points. How are you going to pay for it? Oh, you already answered, but I'm going to just say, wait, how will you pay for it? Water off a duck's ass, bro. Unbelievable.
Well, first of all, we spent trillions of dollars in Afghanistan and Iraq, which were obviously spectacular failures. And the first question people were asking was not how are you going to pay for it.
Damn. Facts. That's facts. Nobody ever, when it comes to certain things, the entire media class and the entire political establishment says, shh, 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 we just had a insta bailout of Silicon Valley Bank. The FDIC stepped in and said, we're going to bail you out. And then the Fed stepped in and said, we're going to bail you out. Not a single person was like, how you going to pay for it? And you move it. And you move it. And you move it. But God forbid you bring up like, hey, maybe we should give free lunch to starving kids. Oh! How are you going to pay for that? How dare you? Like, this is what we're talking about here, man. This is how dumb the system is. God, I hate our corporate media so much, and I hate the political establishment so much. She's making the most obvious points in the world. You know how much Iraq costs when all is said and done? $7 trillion. $7 trillion. Again, do you hear people crying about that on mainstream media? Do you hear them? When we pulled out of Afghanistan, which, by the way, cost $2 trillion, the media was harping away for us to get back in. Oh my God, it's really messy, and the Taliban, and what about the girls, and the schools, and what are you doing? Why are you pulling out of the illegal war we did? I think this is a great point for Marianne.
Yes, we should have a fairer taxation, particularly for the very, very rich. We should get rid of these corporate subsidies.
What is the fair taxation? I'm sorry, Ms. Williams. What is the fair taxation? Okay. What's a fair amount for the rich to pay?
I would not have a problem with a wealth tax. I would not have a problem. If you have $50 million in the bank, I don't have a problem with you paying 2% extra in tax. I don't have a problem with that. And if you have $1 billion in asset and we ask for 1% on top of that, that's not even going to affect your day. So,
facts. She's spitting.
You know, we had a 2017 tax cut, $2 trillion, 83 cents went to the highest earners and the richest corporations. Why is it, Neil?
But everyone got that tax cut, right?
No. 83 cents on every dollar went to the top 1% in corporations in the long run of that bill. So, yeah, but we gave crumbs to the working people, huh? Huh? Oh, this is so she's running circles around him, man.
The president limits.
Wait a minute, wait.
I'm sorry, I just want to be clear. I want to limit the 400,000 and over group. That's what the president says he's targeting. Anyone beneath that, below that, will not have to worry about paying a penny more in tax. How do
he's
you
right.
feel about that?
I feel he's absolutely right. Nobody. The middle class tax cut, in the 2017 tax cut, the middle class tax cut was a good idea. So while I would wish to repeal the tax cut on the highest earners, the middle class tax
then
cut was a good idea.
Differ,
and the middle-
how do you differ from President Biden, the man you're trying to topple for the nomination?
Okay.
What is he saying that you are not want to do that
okay.
he's not doing?
Okay. The president approved yesterday the Willow Project, which is a massive fossil fuel extraction plan in Alaska. I would cancel that the first day. I want universal health care like in every other advanced democracy, and the president has said that he would veto a Medicare for All bill if it came to his desk. The president has said that he wants to make pharmaceutical drugs cheaper, a few of them. Like I said, I want universal health care. I want actually what they have in every other advanced democracy, whether it has to do with universal health care, paid family leave. I want to raise the minimum wage. You have one
third of
American
workers. So you want to go further than this president did, even as a vice president working with Barack Obama on so-called Obamacare. You want to go way beyond that, correct?
He's so slow. He's like not prepared for this conversation. She's been saying, I support Medicare for all the entire time. And now, what are we, 4 minutes into the interview? He's like, so you're saying you want to go further than Obamacare? Like, how are you this slow, man? Come on.
I want universal health care like they have in every other advanced democracy. You don't have people die. Look at insulin alone. Look at how many millions of Americans are rationing their insulin. 18 million Americans cannot afford to fulfill the prescriptions that their doctors give to them. You don't have this happening in other advanced
democracies.
I understand.
Democracies. So, you're going to hear critics who are saying you're going to break the bank. We have huge deficits, debt that's piling up. We're in the middle of a fiscal crunch as we speak. Banks are in great disarray, and mm-hmm. you're going to tax it all the more. They say,
you know what I'm going to do?
What do you say?
Oh, My response to that is that there are equally legitimate arguments that say if people have universal health care, if people can go to college, if we get rid of these college loan debts, if we have a higher minimum wage, this will actually stimulate the economy.
She's freaking it. She's freaking it. I mean, I think she's making phenomenal points here. I think Neil Cavuto is pretty slow for this conversation. The part was hilarious. She didn't take the bait on the tax cut thing, which massive credit to her, because I feel like there are other people who would have taken the bait. But she was like, no, I think it's good to cut taxes for working people, but I think we should raise taxes on the wealthy. That is the exact right answer. And then when Neil's like, well, then how are you different from Joe Biden? The reason he says that is because in the circles he run in, they all think that, like, Joe Biden is like Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden is like FDR. Joe Biden is some, like, far lefty or whatever. And Mary Williamson's like, are you kidding me? He wanted to cut prescription drug prices for some drugs. I want to cut the price for all the drugs. He'd totally abandoned any kind of healthcare reform. I want to do Medicare for all, universal healthcare. Like, what are we talking about here? You know, he didn't fight to raise the minimum wage for the entire country. I will do exactly that. I want a higher minimum wage for the entire country. I want free childcare. I want free college. She would eliminate all the student loan debt, not just some of it. So it's amazing when you see somebody who's not in, like, lefty world try to engage with lefty world, and they're like, I really don't see the difference between Joe Manchin and Bernie Sanders. It's like, that's on you, dog. That's on you. All right, so Kamala Harris went on Stephen Colbert's show, and Stephen Colbert's, you know, he likes to play patty cakes with the Democratic establishment. Patty cake, baker's man. I think you're the best. I hate Republicans. Like, is... that's just what they are and what they do, right? Well, he managed to ask, like, one reasonable, fair, not total softball question. And, oh, she fumbles so hard. Oh, my God, she fumbles so hard. Now, by the way, before I play the clip for you, for the love of God, please, subscribe to the channel. We're close to 1 million subs, but also support the show on Patreon, because there are three stories in today's show where I'm going to get probably knocked through copyright. I had John Stewart, Larry Summers debate. I'm definitely getting knocked on that one because Apple is vicious. They're total copyright sharks. So I'm going to get knocked on that. I might get knocked on the HBO Bill Maher versus Andrew Yang clip. And I'm definitely getting knocked on this one because CBS is also massive, massive copyright sharks. So, you know, I had a choice before the show. Do I cover this and just, like, screw myself over, or do I not cover it? And I, of course, picked to cover it because I care more about talking about this stuff with you guys than I do about, you know, any sort of benefit to myself. But if you guys could make up for the downfall by, number one, subscribing to the channel, number two, support the show on Patreon, links in the video description box below. Anyway, so here we go. Kamala Harris massively fumbling and giving us an awesome gaffe.
Was there any discussion in the White House about what the blowback would be for approving the Willow Oil Project? Because people have gotten quite upset about it. I think there's some protesters outside right now.
Well, I think that the concerns are based on what we should all be concerned about. But the solutions have to be and include what we are doing in terms of going forward, in terms of investments.
Was there any discussion?
Bruh. You said nothing. This Willow project that they're doing is a fossil fuel extraction project in the Arctic, and it's going to be the equivalent of having millions more cars on the road. Just massive, massive carbon emissions, and it's all for the sake of for oil companies. That's her answer. I want to play for you one more time. I've never seen somebody say so many words, but make literally no point whatsoever. I can't even, like, read between the lines. Here's what she meant. Normally, I'm good at that. I'm good at taking what somebody's saying and tell, here's what I think they meant. Normally, I'm good at that. This here, I got nothing. I got nothing.
In the White House about what the blowback would be for approving the Willow Oil Project, because people have gotten quite upset about it. I think there's some protesters outside right now.
Well, I think that the concerns are based on what we should all be concerned about, but the solutions have to be and include what we are doing in terms of going forward, in terms of investments.
Was there any...
She is the worst politician I've ever seen in my life. Normally, politicians, when they can use fluff, it's artful. You know what I mean? Like, there's some skill there in terms of, let me massage a point, let me finesse a point, let me say, not say something while kind of saying something
to head fake appropriately. This is total fluff, total air, total nothing. Just, this is a kid in seventh grade giving a book report when they didn't read the frickin' book. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does any of this mean? I think the concerns are based on what we should all be concerned about. But the solutions have to be, and include, what we are doing in terms of going forward, in terms of investments. There, just so you know, whether it's Mayor Pete or it's Kamala Harris, they are going to try to shove these two down our throats at one point or another. They are going to try to, through force of will and media propaganda, make them president. They're going to try it. Kamala, ain't no amount of media saving in the world that can prop your ass up. If I wish I could have a conversation with her, scratch that. I, of course, don't wish that. But I would tell her, just, I'd rather you say something that is offensive and authentic than inoffensive and total fluff. Like, you're going to get more hate from this than you will if you say something that's, like, wrong but authentic and confident. I'm astonished at how bad of a politician she is. I really am. And keep it real, we all know why the Biden administration picked her. They wanted to check the identity boxes to give themselves fake cover. It's like, lefties who are skeptical of us and wanted Bernie Sanders, what if I told you we have a black woman for VP? You guys could never say no to a black woman, right? Right? That makes her more left, right? Because she checks identity boxes, so that by definition means she's more left, right? This is what they do. It's the same game the Republicans play. It's the same game the Republicans play. The talk is that Donald Trump wants to pick a woman. Why? All hollow identity stuff just to check boxes because he struggles with suburban women. So the move is, hey, suburban women, I got a woman. We see through all of it. Everything you're doing, we see through it. It is so naked. So Mike Pence is, of course, basically on the campaign trail. He's going to run for president. He's really embarrassing. In many ways, he is the Republican's Kamala Harris. Because he's such a fake, plastic, robotic politician. Well, it's been so embarrassing to watch him do this this tap dance where, like, he tries to criticize Trump tepidly and in certain settings, but in other settings he defends Trump completely. He hasn't figured out how to walk that line between, like, criticizing Trump and saying, hey, I like our record and what we did. And so he just ends up cucking himself over and over. Well, now John Carl presents him, or as we call him, Hot Carl. I think that's some, like, dirty sex act, right? I don't know. Hot Carl presents him with something that's like, dude, you have to attack him over this. And Pence, he doesn't handle this all that well. But they're going to play for him the video of Trump being like, yeah, sure, they were saying hang Mike Pence, but, you know, they were very mad. They're very mad. What do you expect? It is what it is. It's like defending the people who are saying hang Mike Pence. And Mike does not break from his, like, I'm the politician persona. It is so embarrassing. Watch this.
Were you worried about him during that siege? Were you worried about
his
safety?
No, I thought he was well protected, and I had heard that he was in good shape. Mm-hmm. No, because I had heard he was in very good shape. But no,
you
I
heard those chants. That was terrible. I mean, it was, you know,
he could have. Well, the people were very angry.
They're saying hang Mike.
Because it's common sense, John. It's common sense that you're supposed to protect. How can you, if you know a vote is fraudulent, right?
Yeah.
How can you pass on a fraudulent vote to Congress?
I mean, he's effectively justifying or excusing the actions of people who were calling for you to be hanged.
There was no excuse for the violence that took place at the Capitol on January 6th, and I'll never diminish it as long as I live. But look, the president's wrong. He was wrong that day, and I had actually hoped that he would come around in time.
How?
That he would see that the cadre of legal advisors that he surrounded himself with had led him astray. But He hasn't done so. And I think it's one of the reasons why the country just wants a fresh start.
Does justifying those murderous chants, does that effectively disqualify him from being commander-in-chief again?
I think that's a judgment for the American people to make.
He's such a cuck. That is such a cuck move, man. Unbelievable. Like, here's the problem. Pence has said, I agree with Trump on everything except this one thing. I wouldn't have done a coup and tried to do an insurrection, and I don't want to murder myself. And it's like, but you're not even making a strong case on that point. Like, at no point has he ever actually broken it down. Here's exactly why Trump is wrong. Here's exactly why the election wasn't stolen. Here's exactly why I did not have the authority to say, I'm going to reject the outcome of this election. Like, Pence was in contact with top conservative Republican judicial minds, including like a Reagan-appointed judge who's in phenomenal standing with the right-wing base. And that guy was telling him in no uncertain terms, you do not have the authority to just throw out the results of an election like this. You don't have the authority to send it back to the states. This is made up. There's no legal avenue where you can do that. But Mike Pence refuses to say any of this stuff. He doesn't say any of it. Is Donald Trump disqualified because he was justifying the hang Mike Pence chants? And he's like, I'll leave that up to the American people. From your perspective, be like, of course I think he is. Of course I think he is. They were chanting, hang Mike Pence. My life was in danger. And he's over there playing patty cakes with these people. Are you kidding me? But he can't do it. He can't bring it up. Just colossal, colossal cuck energy.
What's your judgment about it?
And I'm confident they'll make it. Well, look, I'll be honest with you. I was angry that day. And while I believe in forgiveness, I've been working hard at that for a while. The president let me down that day. He let the country down that day. But thanks to the courage of law enforcement, the riot was quelled. We reconvened the Congress the very same day, and a day of tragedy became a triumph of freedom. And I'll always be proud of our small part in that. But be honest with you, the emotions of that day, the emotion sense, I just haven't had time for it. To me, there's just too many issues that we're facing this country today under the failed policies of this administration that I don't have a lot of time for looking backwards.
Could you ever support him again for president?
I think that's yet to be seen, John. I must tell you that I think we'll have better choices. We're going to decide as a family whether we offer ourselves as one of them. But I think different times call for different leadership.
It's amazing to me that he can't break through his robotic, inauthentic politician speak and his smarmy look of... And I like how he always brings up, like, me and my family will talk about what we're going to do going forward. It's like, dog, no, literally nobody asked you. Nobody's, Mike Pence, what are you going to do? Are you going to run for president? Nobody asked you. Nobody cares. He's like, I'll tell you what my plans are when the time is right, John. And John's like, anyway, so back to Trump saying he wants to murder you. Look, this smarmy, overly robotic, plastic-ass politician stuff, you're never gonna take down Trump like that. You're never gonna do it. The only one who's in potentially a position to take down Trump is DeSantis, but even he's fumbling the ball. Because he went with this, like, high road thing, which isn't a terrible idea, but he didn't pair it with, like, here's just two shots I'm gonna take at Trump over and over and over. Like, here's two jabs that I'm just gonna let you know, like, hey, dog, know your role, I'm gonna stand up to you if need be. Right? The ones I came up with was, in Florida, we keep criminals locked up. They release them. It's not me, it's him. He did the First Step Act. They released criminals on the streets, and we have a massive rising crime rate. In Florida, we lock criminals up and we keep them locked up. Now, bullshit attack, because the First Step Act was a good thing, right? But that's something that could work with the Republican base. Or the, you know, hey, Trump said he'd keep our jobs here. There were 200,000 jobs outsourced under him. I like the guy. I think he did a good job on a number of other issues, but facts are facts. 200,000 jobs were outsourced. And in Florida, we've had X number of millions jobs created. So I'm going to create jobs. He outsourced them. Like, do the above the fray. Hey, I like him. He's a good guy. You know, I supported him, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to check your ass. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. But he can't even do that. Can't even do that. So looks like Trump's going to steamroll these dudes. And Mike Pence, like, you're presented with tape where he's justifying people who chanted "Hang Mike Pence," and you can't even muster like a real reaction where you break down. Like, this is idiotic. Like, really? This is what we're having? You lost by 7 million votes, you whiny little tantrum-throwing, insecure, petty little prick bitch. But he doesn't have it in him. He doesn't have it in him. He doesn't have it in him. It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. There you go. All right, guys, that's the show. I love you all to death. Thank you so much for listening. Do me a big favor, click the like button, click the subscribe button. We're getting close to 1 million subs. We're going to do a special stream on Thursday, midday, probably around 2 o'clock. Everybody check it out. You know, I'll do a show. I'll do some stories. We'll talk about the million sub thing. I'll read some super chats. We'll have some fun. I'm looking forward to it. So click that subscribe button. Help get us closer. We're right there. We're right on the edge. And we can be there by that day. And if we are there by that day, then we're going to try to get to like 105,000 or 110,000 by doing our live stream, and we'll have some fun with it. So anyway, also, if you guys want to listen to the full show in podcast form, the audio version, you can go over to Spotify. We post the full shows there every single day. We have a show, so definitely go check that out. And please support the show on Patreon if you like what we do here. Link in the video description box below. Just $2 a month goes a very, very long way. And thank you to everybody who also supports Crystal Kyle and friends. You guys are awesome as well. All right, guys, I love you. I'll talk to everybody soon. Peace.